Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am joined today by a very interesting young woman who, as we can hear, is going places, and that's part of the life. Katie Bernardin is a professional handler. She is a young woman who is right now in a tight race to show the number one dog of all breeds in the United States, which is quite an accomplishment in and of itself, never mind for someone who is still young in the sport. So congratulations, Katie. I think that's pretty amazing.
Thank you.
It is.
Very amazing.
You guys have done a great job this year. So I think that is pretty awesome. And we were just talking off air, Katie, before we get too far down the road. Congratulations. You were recently married in the middle of running the dog to number one. You got married in September.
You know, why not throw a wedding in the middle of it?
What the heck? I mean, come on, right?
Yeah, we told everyone it was a shotgun wedding, but really it was just do it. Suck it up and do it. And then we took our red eye home.
Right, exactly. Okay, now we're done with that. Let's get on with the rest of the world. So tell us, give us the 411. I mean, everybody in the dog sport who's been at it for a couple of years probably has heard of Katie Shepherd, young woman who is very successful as a junior handler. So tell us how you got to this place.
Can we start at the beginning?
Well, you know, pretty much the beginning. I mean, we don't have to do diapers or anything.
Well, I was still at dog shows in diapers.
There you go.
But basically, I thank my grandma for it. My parents worked full-time jobs, so my grandma took care of me during the weeks, and she did a lot of obedience. She bred miniature schnauzers. She showed miniature schnauzers, did obedience. So I started going to the dog shows in a stroller. There were pictures of me in sit stays in my grandma's front yard. Those pictures are probably floating around somewhere. But my parents knew how much I loved the dogs, and they just kind of let me go with it. And I showed my first dog when I was 7. My grandma was best friends with a woman that bred and showed a ton of miniature schnauzers, Carol Garmaker. She died when I was 10. But I would go to all the dog shows, stand on a little stool, and try to help dry and chalk the schnauzers.
So you're there, you're doing miniature schnauzers. So now you're running a giant schnauzer. You're grand champion Ingabar's Tynan's Dances with Wildflowers. So this is something that is not particularly outside your realm of experience.
No, it's my first time focusing on a working dog. I've always grown up with hounds and sporting dogs. So showing Ty is a little out of my comfort zone. It took time to learn. There's a big difference between showing a sporting dog and a hound and a working dog. There always is little differences.
Yes, there is.
Just teaching myself how to be different with him. So it's been a year of learning. I've learned an immense amount of and about Ty. And at the end of the day, I learned a lot about myself, pushing myself and pushing him. But I've been doing this a long time, and I've worked for great people. And you take something from every person.
Right. I wanted to talk a little bit. Now, you were very successful in junior showmanship. When you started from toddlerdom on, you went into junior showmanship.
Yep.
So talk to us a little bit about what you got from that and then where you went from there. The path that you took to this particular exalted level is something that I think a lot of people can learn from.
When I was in juniors, my grandma got me a wire dachshund for me to show. I was a very little girl. Putting schnauzers on the table was very hard for me. So I got into hounds, and then my grandma wanted me to learn how to trim them and show them right. So she introduced me to a breeder, which is where we got our dachshund from, in which she introduced me to Lori Wilson, which is how I got to know Lori. Lori took me under her wing, taught me how to trim the breed, show the breed, which then led to me showing Whippets in juniors or Greyhounds or Rhodesian Ridgebacks. And being with Lori teaches you the sight hound way, you know. Everything is very soft and very gentle. You learn a lot showing. And then once I aged juniors at 18, she was with somebody else, and I wanted to learn sporting dogs. I loved springers and setters. I wanted a setter for years before. So when Lori moved to Pennsylvania, I went with her, and she was dating the late Andrew Doyle. And he was very famous in setters. He won the Setter National. He showed a bunch of English setters and springers. So that's what I wanted to learn, was sporting dogs. So I had the best of both worlds. I had my hounds with Lori and my sporting dogs with Andrew. And I stayed at Andrew's till the day he died. So 2004 to 2009. So you learn a lot in 5 years.
Yes, yes, you can. And you have now reached the ripe old age of...
31.
Yes. But that, to me, Katie, I think is a testament to the work that you've put in, clearly, and what you learned from Lori and what you learned from Andrew. And talk to us about the lessons that you took away in the grand scheme of things, if you will, from that mentorship.
We always joke around, and the biggest thing is you have to love your job. You have to do it with a passion. In order to do it right, you have to love it. You have to sacrifice a lot of your own life to make sure the life of the dogs is always put first. Why else would most people drive hours upon hours to different locations, never being home, if you didn't love it? And the dogs always have to come first. And they taught me how to take care of dogs. And that's a lot of things some people growing up now don't understand, is that you have to learn to take care of dogs.
Absolutely. I think that that is one of the most critical things. Talk to us a little bit, and this is a little bit of a hot button topic, but talk to us about the path from junior showmanship to professional handler that doesn't happen 30 seconds after you turn 18.
You know, when Andrew died, I wasn't ready to go out on my own. I didn't want to. I did not feel like I was ready, but I was in that position where I either jump in or I try to find somebody else to go work for. And it wasn't an overnight decision. Like, I went to a client's house and I thought about it for a month and I was like, okay, I feel I have learned a lot in however long I've been working for people. But even at that stage, I still didn't feel as if it was my time. You know, at that time, I had a lot of handler friends that I looked up to and I would ask them questions. You can't stop learning. That is the biggest thing. You cannot stop learning. You know, when I got married to Adam, he still teaches me so much and he has learned so much. We were just having this conversation the other night about how we have learned so much from other people. And he'll go ask Will Alexander how to do something, or I'll still call Lori and ask her, or I can call Angie Lloyd and ask her a question. You know, why do you trim it like that? Why do you show it like that? Somebody always knows the answer.
Well, and I think what you're talking about here is you have a wonderful opportunity because you spent the time and paid your dues and got to know some of these people. But I think it's important the focus on continuing to learn. And I would say, how would you make a recommendation to either young people who are now aging out of juniors or to owner handlers, new folks that are just starting in the sport? How is the best way to continue to learn all the time?
Go watch a different breed. Go watch like a very competitive breed and watch how those handlers put their hands on their dogs. You can ask so much of a dog without ever asking them to do it. You have to build a bond with the dog. And for like juniors that want to be a professional handler, go spend a year. Go spend a year waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
At least
waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, going to bed at 10 o'clock at night, bathing dogs all day long, not just bathing dogs, but feeding dogs, trying to feed yourself, trying to feed people that work for you, making sure they get enough exercise, making sure they're out in the paddock or on the bike. It's a very hard life. It is a very hard life. And I feel people that coming out of juniors, they need to learn that it's not just about showing up at the dog shows with your dog. It's a whole lot of going into it. And it's a lot of spending time. I can tell you what dog is barking in the kennel without even knowing what dog it is. Or this dog is just a slight bit off. I will know why, or I will know that it's a slight bit off because I've spent 16 hours with him a day.
Exactly. But I think what you make a really great point there, Katie, and that is that not just the bond that handlers have with dogs that I think sometimes folks outside of our tiny little world don't understand. And reality, ours is a small world, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole big world out there that doesn't get what we do.
No.
But I think the bond that you talk about, but also the awareness, and I think that is a taught thing, right? Like what you're talking about, the mentorship that you had, the awareness of your animals and what's right and what's not right is so imperative.
It is, because with Lori, like the sight hounds, if they didn't eat, you could tell the next day. So I learned that. And then with Andrew, we had Irish setters. So you need to know if it is acting the slightest bit off, because in an hour it could die if it bloated. you have to know the breeds you're carrying. You have to know what is common, what is normal for that dog, and what is not. Stuff happens. Accidents happen, and it's happened to everybody. But the more you know, the more you prepare yourself, the more confident you'll be, and the more you won't panic in a situation. If a dog's bloating, grab a tube, do it. Be confident and know what you're doing.
I think, actually, you make a really great point there, Katie, that we haven't really talked a lot about on the show, and that is knowledge gives you confidence, and confidence kills panic. And I think that is such an important thing for people to hear, because if you know what to do, you know how to do it, you know when to do it, then there is no dithering. And as we all know, dithering will kill you or your pet.
Yes. Like I always say, think now, do what you know what to do, and then you can have your moment afterwards. Trust me, I've done it. Everything happens quick. You do it, and then you sit down, and you're like, holy crap. And then you can have your moment.
Then you can cry and pee in your pants. Been there, done that.
Then you can cry and boo-hoo all you want. But in that moment, something else is dependent upon you. Even if it's your truck breaking down on the side of the road, don't freak out. Make the phone calls you have to do. Call whoever you have to call and get it figured out. Then worry later. Those are things that you learn.
Yeah, and those are great points. And I do this talking to people all the time now. I don't even think about it. So I really value that input. I think that's a really great place for people to have in their heads. So you talked a little bit earlier about this is a hard business if you want to be a professional handler.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a challenging sport, whether you're an owner handler or a professional handler. But you are experiencing what is, from everything I've been told from everyone who's been there and done it, the single toughest thing that you can do in this sport, which is to run a dog in a competitive race for number one all breeds. So let's talk just a little bit about what's great about it and what's not so great about it.
Well, first of all, I will tell you that I am very blessed with my support system. Adam has done it, so he's been there, done it. I couldn't do it without him. He gives me the confidence. He knows when to push. He knows when to back off. Then I have my other friend, Kelly Shupp, who's traveling with me. And really, she travels with me to keep my head level. She doesn't let me get too sucked into it. She just, go do your job. Here's your dog, go do your job. And that's what we always say, do your job. And Sandy Nordstrom, who pays for Ty, she is the most wonderful human being I've ever been around. She is like one of my mothers. She never puts any pressure on me. She's, go have fun. So in that aspect, I am very blessed that I have such great people behind me that they don't let me freak out and be down on myself or down on a weekend or anything like that. It's tough because one of the bad things is I'm never home. I miss my pets at home. I miss my husband. No, I have my own
Your
pets.
Your bed. I miss my bed all the time.
Oh, my God. I miss my bed so much. I buy really good sheets, too, and I don't get to share them.
Okay, it's embarrassing when we miss our bed more than anything else.
I know, and I'm a laundry queen. I love to do laundry when I get home, and I barely have time to do laundry. Like, it's weird. I'm weird.
That's good. Everybody's got to have a thing, man.
Ask my husband. I'm crazy about laundry. I miss sitting on my porch and watching our pets run in the front yard. You know, we have old Irish setters and Griffon. That's the hardest thing, is just being away from home. But if we're home for 3 days, it's nice. Ty goes home to his mom. She lives in Rhode Island.
Interesting. Now, that is the different way than most of the people I've heard and known that have done it, that he is going home in between.
I will tell you, that is the most important thing to that dog. And it's the most important thing for his brain. He is such a machine, but he has to have downtime just like I do. If I get home at 10 o'clock in the morning, his mama is at my house at 10 o'clock in the morning to get him. She takes him to one of her properties and lets him run for 3 miles. He probably runs 6 miles a day with her. And then he goes home and crashes, and he's a thieving little monster. He takes food off her counter all the time. Last week, he stole steaks off her counter and took them out the doggy door. She takes him to Home Depot, the library, the post office. The dog is a dog. And then she brings him back Wednesday, and you can tell he's focused, he's sharp. He jumps into the truck. He jumps into the bathtub. He is ready to go. Last week, we drove through the night so I could let him go home for a day or two before the end of the year push. You have to sacrifice hair sometimes for his mental happiness.
Well, and I think what you're giving people is an example of really smart management, right? We manage these dogs and how they compete, and you have to know what's right for each dog. And what's right for him would be not necessarily right for another dog, but to know and to have learned and to have focused on what is right for this dog, I think is very, very impressive.
like I said, it's just knowing them. Yeah, trust me, I wouldn't send another dog home like that every week. Oh my God, no.
Several that the thought gives me a nervous sweat.
I know, it makes me shiver a little bit. But what I always tell our clients, trust us to make the right decision for your dog. We are never going to do anything that will harm your dog or make it unhappy or mentally hurt in the ring. Trust us to make the right decision for your dog, because that our heart is in the right place always.
So building that team, I mean, and talk to a couple other people. I talked to Laura King about this some, but building that team to run at that level, trust is something that I hear repeatedly, consistently in those conversations, that the team that you put together, the owner, the financer, the handler, the groomer, whatever it is, whatever team you put together, trust is so important.
Trust is important in everything that we do. It's hard to talk about it because it's a feeling. It's a feeling you have. Not only do I trust them, but I trust Ty. I trust every dog I walk into the ring with to try. You know, I know if I walk out of the ring and call Adam, I trust him. No matter what I say, if I'm upset or anything, or if I'm happy, or I trust Kelly. I trust my other friends that sometimes I'll pick up in the phone in the middle of the night to call. Like, oh, hey, what are you doing?
Hey.
Yeah, oh, hey, I'm just, you know, the middle of nowhere, just calling.
Well, and I think that one of the things that I've always valued a lot is that the dogs trust me. Right? So you have built that trust relationship with the dog, that he knows you are going to keep him safe, you know, all of that.
Yeah, it's, I guess sometimes I get a little speechless talking about it because it's still very surreal to me.
It's okay. That's okay. You have earned your trust and you have earned your moment. So it's all right. So give us some ideas, some suggestions. You've been up one side and down the other of the purebred dog sport. And you've written for Showsite Magazine, you've done all kinds of things in all kinds of places. So let's talk about some really positive ideas, suggestions, things you think that we could all strive to do better at.
I think it goes back to never stop learning. Just watch and help and listen and have intelligent conversations with people about different breeds and just be involved. I think that's the biggest thing for everybody is just to be involved. Keep learning, work hard, and never stop trying your best.
I like that. I like that. Never stop trying your best. Got you pretty far down this road, so congratulations.
I will say the one thing that Andrew Doyle always told me is think of someone you really admire in the sport and pretend they're always looking over your shoulder.
I like that.
I'm not going to lie. That helped me get through a lot of things. If you ever think you want to take a shortcut, be like, ooh, what would they think? And it worked pretty well for me for a lot of years. Pretend they're always looking over your shoulder.
That's a good one, Katie. I think that if more people would hear that advice and heed it, I think that we'd all be in a pretty good spot. So thanks for that. I really appreciate it.
Because you know you try harder when everyone is looking.
Yep, I like it. Well, thank you. Congratulations. We will look forward to seeing you in Orlando, in New York, we think. Yes?
Yes. Yes, we'll be there.
All right. All right. Well, you keep trying your best and we'll keep watching for you.
All right. Thank you so much, Laura. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Katie. Appreciate you joining us. All right, crew. We are back with Allison Foley from the Leading Edge Dog Show Academy. And Allison is here to give us her tip of the week, to give you the leading edge with your dog at the dog show. And Allison, welcome.
Thanks, Laura. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Very good. And today we are talking about getting your walk on, yeah?
Yeah, we are. Yes, I want to talk about treadmills. So when I first started in dogs many, many moons ago, I had heard that you really shouldn't work your dog on a treadmill, that it could cause your dog to pound in the front and it just could build up bad habits. So for a long, long time, I didn't use a treadmill because I was worried about these things. So now, for the last 10 years or so, I have to say that, you know, I live in a place where the weather is not always cooperative, right?
Right.
And, you know, it can be cold, icy, lots of snow. And I think it's just as important that your pug or your dachshund or your short-legged dogs are in condition as a longer-legged dog, like your Spinoni or your poodle or your Doberman. And, you know, there's poodles in the rain. If you're going to road work your poodle in the rain, then you just start creating a whole other set of problems. And the weather is changing, right? Like, climate deniers be damned. I have to say that it's hotter, it's colder, in more areas of North America, right? So it makes it harder to give your dog consistent exercise.
I agree.
And I do think it is important for your dogs mentally and physically to just be in shape if we're going to take them to dog shows. Like, you see some dogs go around the ring and they're just not loving it or doing it. And you know that for some of the dogs, like, that's the most exercise they've had in 2 weeks is running around that ring, right?
Yes.
And so I honestly believe that nothing can really replace you getting out with your dog on a road that's not hot, that's not cold, that's not raining, it's not snowy, it's not icy, and, you know, working that dog for 10, 20, or 30 minutes every single day. But I just know that that would make me be in incredible shape, too, and I can't even do it for myself, never mind for... five show dogs.
Well, I do think that, and this is my personal plug, I do think there's not much that we can do that replaces the quality exercise that comes from free play. That's my pitch.
Right. And I do have that on my list too. So I like to use the treadmill so my dog is at a proper show gait. So they're not pacing, they're not side widening, but they are at the optimal show gait. And I like my dog to think of the treadmill as a fun place to be. I spent a lot of time getting them comfortable on it.
I think we need to talk about that for sure. How to convince them to not levitate up and over 4 feet when you put them on the treadmill.
Right. First of all, I have a treadmill that's designed for dogs that's very quiet. And I think that that's key. And secondly, it's in the middle of my kennel area and I just play with new dogs on it, right? Like, we just walk up and down it, just like I train them on stack boxes or on happy legs or on a grooming table. I just treat it like one of those pieces of equipment from the time I first get them, whether it's my own puppy at 8 weeks. Not that I've worked them on the treadmill at 8 weeks, but they at least see it and jump on and off it. Or, you know, another show dog that I might get that's 3 years old that, yes, does want to just look at me like, I'm not going near that, sister. I don't care what you think, right? And so I just like have them play on and off it, on and off it. And then once they're trotting on it, I just turn it on so that they just keep walking. And I'm always standing there with them talking and giving them treats, like the literal carrot in front of the horse kind of thing, right? And I really haven't had a problem. If I do have a problem dog, I have it on a leash beside me while I'm working all the other dogs on the treadmill, right? So they're getting a cookie, they're getting a cookie, and they kind of see like, oh, like they get more cookies when they're on the treadmill. So that is what I do. I just treat it just like everything else. Even if they don't go on it because they are a young puppy, they see it every single day. And, you know, if they touch it, they get a cookie. That's how that works. And I do believe that you should use the treadmill and training. And yes, free running is my most favorite thing. You know, I do walk my dogs down into the big field and they do free run two or three at a time together so they can play and race and tug and do all those things. And I think that that is so very important. It is probably more important than the treadmill, but I do believe that the treadmill gives you that little added extra if you can get it. You can consistently exercise your dogs even when free running in the field doesn't fit into your day or it's too hot or too cold when you're around.
Absolutely. And I think my favorite thing about the treadmill is that it sets the proper pace. It's that muscle memory piece. And that, I think, is so critical. And when you have my favorite time, what I've used it for is dogs that are problem movers. So like the Portuguese water dog that could go from a proper trot to a pace on the fly. It was awesome.
So great.
The treadmill's what fixed that. And
right.
So and that kind of thing.
I totally agree that it does fix those little problems. Like, you know, I've had dogs that are good movers, but they'll take three steps and then I say that their legs just aren't organized.
Yes.
And I think the consistency on the treadmill, and I'm only talking 10 to 12 minutes a day, but at that optimal show pace really helps them remember how to keep their legs organized.
Absolutely.
And so my little treadmill cheat is this. The other thing I really like it for is I'm a huge proponent of when you trim your dog, whether it's a Spinoni or a poodle, that you really need to look at your dog moving.
Yes.
To see where that hair flops and goes on a top line, on a front, on a rear, on a foot, on a head, on anywhere. And one of the things that I love about the treadmill is I can put my dog on it and I can stand in front of it for 10 minutes and see exactly where that hair is flopping, right?
Like
your dog
that.
Might move very true in the front, but if you have hair hanging off the elbows or armpit hair or, you know, a piece on the top line that when your dog's in that optimal pace is just flipping the wrong way, even though your dog could have a great top line. And again, for the rear, Now, sometimes with the rear, you need somebody that can stand in because the dog just wants to look behind you. Like, why are you behind me on the treadmill? But same thing. I like to look at especially poodles with those little fancy pom-poms at the end of their feet.
Is it touching? Trim just...
Yeah. And have I created a fault with my grooming when my dog is moving? And it's just, yes, I watch them with somebody else moving them on a leash. But when you can look at it for 3 minutes going at the proper speed on a flat surface right in front of you, right? Because if somebody's moving it on a lead, clearly they're getting farther and farther away from you, but you can concentrate on where that piece of hair is going. So I love the treadmill for that.
Love it. Thank you so much, Allison. We very much appreciate your tip of the week. And I want to remind all of our listeners, okay, guys, we all love Allison. We all love her programs. I know that you're all going there to talk to her. Don't forget, Pure Dog Talk 25, when you check out, saves you a boatload of money. That's 25% off the registration for that class. That seems like a good thing to put in the piggy bank. So.
And I love my Pure Dog Talk students because they're so educated about everything doggy. They make great students. So I'm so happy you had me again this week, Laura.
Thanks a lot, Allison. You have a great day.
You too.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.